are just having a really great time here in the studio. We were talking in our first hour about Esther and how Esther and Mordecai began to overturn the law of being able to commit genocide against the Jews in their time, essentially, and write up a new law. We talked about all sorts of interesting things in regards to that. We had a really spicy quiz question just before the news came through, and we've got some contention there. But if you want to catch up on all of this, if you weren't able to join us for our first hour, you can go to the website or to the Faith FM app when the episode is released a little later today, and you can catch up on it then. So we also have a great lineup of topics that we're going to be discussing in the rest of today's show. We're going to be looking at the flash flood that took place just overnight up in the Himalayas, and there are people missing, people have died, including an Aussie that is missing currently. We're going to be talking to Putin from Asian Aid, and she's going to be sharing with us about what's going on with them. In our encounter with God in our third hour, we're going to be going through 2 Corinthians, and starting off in chapter 1, we'll be looking at love-driven ministry. But right now, we have got a new quiz question, and do you want to share with us some of the contention around the last quiz question?
Well, the phrase isn't exactly directly in the Bible, but when you look at those phrases in many different versions, it does allude very closely to "a little bird told me."
Yeah.
So I can see why you guys both answered nope. But yes, it's
it's basically there, but just not at the same time.
That's right.
So tricky.
It was a tricky shell. She's left us
shell
with a clanger. You can gear up tomorrow when she's back. Okay, so do you want another quiz question?
Yeah, of course. Let's go. Don't deprive me.
I'm not depriving you.
Quiz number three.
Quiz number three. All right, I can give you some in the news break if you like. I can find some extra ones
just for
you.
Just for you and me.
All right, so Jesus likened the Spirit to what weather condition? Jesus likened the Spirit to what weather condition? Yes.
I got it.
Host Lindsay and our host Ben, yes, have both got that one. Jesus likened the Spirit to what weather condition? If you know the answer, text us on 0491 064 669. That's 0491 064 669. If you know the answer to Jesus likened the Spirit to what weather condition? And you can find that in John chapter 3, verse 8.
Okay, thank you so much, Jules, for that quiz question. Make sure you guys play along with us and try to beat us if you can. But right now, let's jump into our good news story. We're going to be hearing something about the top countries for education. Tell us more, please, Ben.
Yes. Each year there's a, what do you call it?
Like a rank.
A rank of countries. And the good news is, first up, Australia ranks in the top 10 countries.
Woohoo!
Globally.
Like number 10?
Yeah. No. Better than number 10.
Oh, okay. Well.
There's various different ways of looking at education. So, yeah, we're in the top 10 countries globally for overall educational attainment and health development, placing third in the world for its higher education, strength and consistency, featuring in the top 10 for school student performance in reading, science and mathematics.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's not too bad.
Okay.
The best countries in the world are the Asian countries.
Interesting.
South Korea, Singapore, Hong Kong, Taiwan.
Do they just have a genetic advantage over us? It kind of seems like it sometimes.
I'm not sure. I didn't pick that up. Could be. So yeah, Taiwan, Canada's in there too.
Oh, okay.
Finland and Estonia. There was a lot said about Estonia.
Interesting.
And Finland. Yeah. So the average countries are the European countries, even though they think or thought that they were high in education. So France, Germany, Spain and some of those countries are not doing that great. They're average. Yeah. Some of the poorer education countries, South America, Central America. and much of the Arab world.
Okay.
Yeah. So interesting that Singapore before 1960 was a poor country, poorly educated, and they believed that higher skills, higher education would bring higher income and wealthier country.
Yeah.
Which proved to be true. So Singapore is doing well in this day and age. And they attribute it because of education. Yes. So the global standing, Australia features the third strongest highest education system in the world.
Australia?
Yes, Australia.
Number three. Awesome.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Trailing only the US and the UK.
There you go.
Hmm.
I wonder what part of Australia is best for education. I know the Victorian number plates, most of them say education state, but, like, just because they say it doesn't mean it's necessarily true. Like, I wonder where in Australia we have the best schools.
Yeah. Well, the news said that the top institutions, multiple universities, regularly rank inside the global top 20 and top 50, such as the University of Melbourne in major international indices like QS and Times Higher Education. So it seems like our universities, and maybe this is why we have so many migrants or what do you call it?
Immigrants.
Immigrants coming to study in our universities from overseas.
True. Makes sense.
Yeah. And it seems like these countries that are wanting to develop more are sending their young kids or, you know, young people to universities in countries that have good education to help their own country.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So how do you personally value education?
Yeah. I didn't like school much. I left school as soon as I could.
I get that.
But I've wished I didn't now.
Okay.
Yeah, realizing that education is beneficial, very beneficial in a number of areas and roles. Some of the employment and jobs that I would have liked to have done, like architecture and some of those sort of things. That's made it more difficult. And why I have done higher education, it was challenging. Yeah. And now the years have gone by, it's a bit too late. Well, never too late, I guess. But for
just
for
not work, your focus in life right now.
Yeah. And what about you? You've done quite a bit of education and still in it.
Yeah, look, when I was in primary school, I didn't like the idea of studying any more than I had to. I didn't enjoy it. I didn't have a good experience with early education. And so I decided at the ripe old age of about, I don't know, 7 or 8 years old, when I finish high school, I'm never going to go to university. I don't care. I'm not going to do it. Like, I didn't know much about the value of it at the time. But I guess my mum always says never say never, so here we are. Or, like, if you say you're not going to do something, it's probably going to happen. So I am back at my education institution for a fourth course of study. So I studied outdoor recreation, which was like a TAFE level course. And then I did a bridging course into uni because when I graduated high school, I kind of fudged my way through a little bit and I needed a little extra help in one or two areas before I could get into a university degree. Then I studied a Bachelor of Arts in chaplaincy and now I'm just about to graduate from a master's in ministry. So yes, I have done a lot more higher education than I had planned at the age of 8. And I actually really enjoy it. Most of the time, I love learning things. And I even talk about how when I'm scrolling on Instagram, I curate my algorithm so that it gives me educational content.
Yeah.
I love learning new stuff and getting to apply it if it's practical and helpful. So I like learning things. I don't usually like proving the fact that I've learned something by, like, writing an essay, but I do love having finished writing an essay because I'm like, oh, look at the amazing things I now officially know and can articulate in a logical stream of thought.
Yeah. on this educational side of things, you know, when we look at the Bible, and the Bible says that, you know, towards the end of the time, that knowledge will increase, you know.
Yeah,
men will,
it does.
Men will run to and fro.
Yeah.
And just think of the knowledge increase that we have these days. And they're talking about AI will you know, soon, eventually, in not too distant future, will become smarter than a human being. And then you know, they're talking about the AI will become smarter than all of humanity's knowledge combined.
Wow.
In one computer. And so that's a massive amount of knowledge.
Yeah, I saw a little snippet the other day of one of the guys who is like the brains behind OpenAI, or I've forgotten his name, but he was basically in this little snippet of an interview saying that the future, like the future of the world that he envisions, is a place where intelligence is a commodity that people pay for. Like, we completely neglect the use of our own brains for intelligence, and it's something that you buy on a subscription basis.
Yeah. It makes me think, you know, when we get to heaven, what are we going to do for eternity?
Yeah.
But imagine learning every single language in the world fluently. Mm. And imagine learning, doing every PhD possible and every science and every aspect of existence.
It's going to be really cool when we get to heaven. We get to actually learn about the intricacies of the creation of this universe. I think that's going to be a really cool way to spend our time, is just digging more and more into the amazing discoveries that there are to be found in God's universe.
Yeah.
Super cool.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
We're now going to go to our quiz answer. The question was, Jesus likened the Spirit to what weather condition? Of course, it was the wind. Jesus likened the Spirit to the wind, and that was found in John 3, verse 8.
You are listening to The Breakfast Show here on Faith FM. I am Shell, and I'm doing this interview today with Pudens, and she works for Asian Aid. To begin with, for those who may not be familiar with AsianAid, can you tell us a little about the organization and the communities that you are working with?
Sure. So AsianAid is an Australian-based organization, has been around for 60 years. The countries that we primarily work in are India, Bangladesh, Nepal, and Cambodia. It's a faith-based, child-focused organization, so it's all about the kids.
Oh, wonderful.
So we help with kids' education. We support their families through livelihood and skills training so that parents and caregivers are able to take care of their children and the communities. We also, there's a lot of focus on helping children not just study well, but stay healthy, be involved in their communities, raise their voice against any injustice that they see. So we focus on all-round development of children in the communities that we work in.
Oh, okay. Wow, that's so great. And we get you on a few times every year, and it's wonderful to hear from you.
Yeah.
When we talk about eye health, because that's what you wanted to focus in on today. So in these communities, what are some of the biggest challenges that the children and the families are facing?
The reason why eye health has become one of our main focuses is because there is such a huge gap there. I was just looking at, you know, numbers, and 50%, that's more than half actually in these countries, children who have eye issues, it could be blurry vision, these are all treatable conditions, more than 50% of children go untreated. And that is a huge gap, and that's what we're trying to see what we can do. So we have so many health camps happening in our schools, in our communities, and eye health has become a big part of that. One of the main reasons is obviously parents, their main focus is survival and putting food on the table, and, you know, lack of awareness on how bad poor eye vision can affect children.
Yeah, so a child who doesn't get their vision tended to early on, what can happen?
One of the things is they lose their confidence in education. So when already education is not a priority in these families, there's a very real risk that they drop out of school. So they, you know, parents prefer, oh, you're not able to study, you might as well come and help us with our work and earn an extra income. So that is a very real risk with us. And so that's what we're trying to stop, to help kids stay in school. You know, they get regular eye checkups.
Yes.
And then there's follow-ups as well. So a child, they know, so the parents know that, okay, this is an issue my child is facing. They're aware of it now. And then every year they're encouraged to stay on top of it and make sure the child is looked after.
Can you walk me through like a day, I guess, in the way that you would go to a specific school and then do screening at the school, or do you bring children to you? How does that all work?
So there are two contexts to this. One is, of course, as you mentioned, the school. So because we work in several schools, some of these schools are in remote areas and some in urban contexts. So yes, we do have doctors and a team that goes into these schools regularly. And again, the school checkups are not just for the kids. There's also parents and community members who are free to come and get themselves checked as well. So we have basic height, weight, sugar and blood pressure checks, and then some more tests. And then the eye health is another big part of that. So they go through that one by one through the school rooms and get themselves checked and then follow up if needed. In communities where we work among families, again, it's very similar, but I would say the interesting thing is when we want to let them know that, you know, there's an eye health camp happening, say, in this common area or in this hall or in this government school, public school, they go around door to door inviting people saying, you know, this is what's happening on this day. It's free. Come and get yourself and your families checked. There's interesting. Have you heard of these tuk-tuks and auto rickshaws here? So they go around with a loudspeaker, you know, by street, inviting people. So that's how it's done. And there's a lot of preparation. There's a lot of teamwork. There's community workers involved. There's obviously medical professionals, our staff, teachers. A lot of people get together to get this going.
Beyond treating so the immediate problem, how do these health camps affect the wider community then?
There's a lot. So depending on which country and where we are at, there are so many different issues. So for example, in Nepal, uterine prolapse is another big problem. Women suffer a lot. They go through so much pain because of that. And they go untreated for decades, not even years. There are 60, 70-year-old women who have suffered from their 20s. And so sometimes that's their first point of contact where they realize, oh, this is actually treatable. So I've been to a couple of these clinics in these really remote areas. These women have barely met a doctor. So it's really, it gives us hope that these camps are actually meeting people where the need is and where, you know, we are making a real change for them because their life changes after that treatment.
So what is it that you are doing specifically for your role that helps to facilitate all of this?
So one of my main interests, as well as my role, is communicating what the impact on the field is, finding these stories and the impact that we're having in these different projects, in these different countries, and then communicating that back to our supporters. I'm seeing firsthand where our support is going to, what it's being used for, and how many people are being impacted and blessed because of that.
Wonderful. Do you have some stories that you'd like to share with us?
Of course. So on iHealth, there was a little girl called Arushi. She's from Nepal, and she lives in a really remote region, village. And when I say remote, I mean you have to walk one day to get to, you know, a town.
Wow.
And obviously they don't have public transport there, or even, of course, no private transport. So walking is the way. So that's how far-flung these villages are. So she went to a health camp at a nearby school recently and found out she's 8 years old. And she wasn't able to see the board in school and she wasn't able to read properly, and she had all these issues, and it looked like her parents were thinking, oh, maybe she's not good at studying, and you know, what do we do? But at this camp is when they found out that, oh, she actually had it's a very treatable condition that a lot of us have, and she just needed a pair of glasses. That's all she needed to sort this out. So at the end of the day, she got her prescription, and then in a few days they went to her house. Our staff went to her house and gave her her new prescription glasses. And they reported that she was so happy with that, and she treated it like a little baby, the way she was holding the glasses.
Wow, wonderful.
That made a big difference for her.
Oh, that's awesome.
Another similar one, there are a couple of boys in Bangladesh who were able to get their overall health checkups and glasses done. And the other thing that I wanted to say is that because of our focus on not just child health, education, but their overall development, in Bangladesh, in the camps there, a couple of boys were able to help in the organization and conducting of the camps itself. So these two young boys went door to door inviting people in their community to come and get themselves checked. And they helped throughout the camps, helping people line up, helping people get whatever they needed. So that is the other side of, you know, these camps that are very impactful. It's not just a one day, one one thing, but it's a sustainable thing that keeps, you know, getting, every year it keeps getting bigger and more impactful.
Wow. So do you use health professionals and communities that are local around you, or are you outsourcing everything from other countries to bring in doctors and the equipment and that sort of thing?
So the doctors and the professionals are local. So depending on where we're conducting the camp, if we have tie-ups with really good hospitals in these countries, so a lot of the doctors and nurses and even volunteers come from there. So they're pretty local, and so they understand the context of the country we're working in. They understand the medical issues that are very, you know, unique to some of these places. So that is an important aspect of it. The equipment, again, a lot of the hospitals do have equipment. We have some portable equipment that AsianAid has supported for and bought them. So, yeah, it's a mix of both. But the professionals, the doctors, the healthcare workers, sometimes even healthcare officials from the government who are involved, they're all local, and they're very committed to what we're doing.
Wow, that's amazing. So I have another question. So the eye health is obviously something that affects everybody, but is it something that is more in poverty and those kind of areas? Does it get worse? Not just because they're not getting the care that they need, but is there other things that might be causing more problems in this area? Does that question make sense?
Are you asking related to eye health?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, of course. I think poverty is the number one reason and issue. I think the other two smaller ones would be lack of awareness, because parents don't even know, or caregivers don't even know that there could be an issue. You know, eye health deteriorates sometimes, or children could face things like this. They think it's only for older people. So that is one. And the other is lack of access. So if a lot of the places don't have health clinics close by, I said, you know, they have to walk a far distance for basic needs, then they're not going to be able to do that. And a lot of them, their entire focus is just on putting food on the table. So if they want to travel, if they want to walk, it's just for survival. It's almost like a luxury, you know. These extra health and other things are, seems, what we take for granted feels like a luxury to them.
Okay, finally, what can our listeners do to support the work of AsianAid?
Pray. There's so many kids, so many people who are in need of care and attention. And we're not able to do everything for everybody, but prayer could go a long way. You can visit our website, asianaid.org.au. We have a link right there as soon as you enter, where you know you can see how you can help financially. So maybe just supporting, helping kids get a prescription glasses, that goes a long way because it's not very expensive. So even if it's a small amount, it will make a big difference on the field, in the ground. So that is one thing they can do, support. There are different gifts that they can support related to eye health. Pick whatever, you know, is closest to your heart and that burdens you.
Yeah, and how can they find you?
asianaid.org.au is our website.
Wonderful. Prudence, thank you so much for joining us here on The Breakfast Show. And we really appreciate the information you've shared and the work that you are accomplishing and the whole organization. And yeah, we pray God's best for the work that you are trying to achieve.
Great talking to you.
You're listening to The Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
In our previous segment, we were listening to Putin from Asian Aid, and now we're getting into our current affairs for today's show. There have been more than 150 people that have been killed after a deadly flash flood hit the Tibet-Nepal border. This just happened overnight, it seems. Hundreds of tourists and hikers have been reported missing, including one Australian. So, like, this is crazy. Have you ever gone for a hike off in the mountains anywhere, Ben?
Yes.
Yeah? What was that experience like?
Not often, but a lot.
Yeah?
Yeah, a bit. Yeah, we hiked the castle just down the south coast.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we started hiking about 10 o'clock at night because we had to drive there. Mm-hmm. We hiked till 2 o'clock in the morning to get to our camp place.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. 2 a.m, man. There you go. Well, there's been a lot of hikers and tourists who have obviously gone to, you know, that area of the Himalayas that is a big tourist spot for people to go hiking. But people also live there, like local Nepalese people and Tibetans. They live in that area. Their homes and their villages, they've all been swept away in a flash flood from the mountains. Mm. The mountains are not just beautiful and majestic, but they can also be deadly. They are living and moving geological features. I remember when I was living in the Solomon Islands as a teenager, when we'd experienced massive earthquakes, I remember standing out the front of my house, looking up at the top of the mountain. You could see the mountains moving during the earthquake. It was a crazy experience.
Mm.
So, what has happened here? So there's been a torrent of water that swept through the Himalayan border on Wednesday morning, local time, killing at least 157 people in Nepal and three in Tibet. There's been more than 484 tourists missing, 391 of them foreign citizens, and 93 from Nepal. So they believe that. Actually, there's also been more than 100 Indians, 12 British nationals, 11 Malaysians, and 3 US citizens also listed among those missing, according to the tourism ministry in Nepal. And there's also 28 local police officers unaccounted for, while South Korean authorities said 8 of its citizens who were working on a hydropower plant are missing as well. So they think that there was an earthquake that struck that kind of began the process of this flash flood, but it's up high in the glaciers, and they believe that the warming of the glacier has caused it to liquefy, and then with this earthquake to all of a sudden release a flash flood, sweeping away villages in its path and everyone who might be nearby. In fact, the local river, the water levels rose over 9 meters in half an hour.
Yeah.
It was a bright, sunny day. And then all of a sudden, they say there was just a roar of a wall of water coming straight towards them.
Mm.
How crazy.
Yeah, because there are mountains there. I've been to Nepal and did a 5-day hike into the mountains there. The mountains are very steep. You know, all their gardens are terraced, So steep mountains, high rainfall, get a lot of landslides and, flooding, bad flooding. The water rushes down and digs everything out.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and it says that there's a snow rock landslide as well may have contributed to this flood. So snow and rock and glacier, the glaciers, I don't know if you know much about the geology of different things in the world, but glaciers are slow moving and very dangerous structures in the world. So it's where the snow is compacted into a valley. And over time, it's just slowly moving and there's crevices being opened up and the rock is being gouged out beneath it and turning it into a great big valley. And so these things, even though they're slow moving, there's so much mass of rock and ice and snow being moved that they are very powerful and very deadly, and all sorts of things can happen. I remember I had friends who used to go hiking in the glaciers in New Zealand. These are friends from Australia. They go to New Zealand for hiking and they would say, Lindsay, we're not going to take you to the glaciers because they are so dangerous. You will probably die if you go there. Like, you're not skilled enough to go. I was like, okay, fair enough. I don't need to go there. Like, I'm happy to go in a hole in the ground in a cave or something that's not likely as much to move and crush me alive, although you can never quite be sure when you're stuck in a hole in the earth.
Yeah, I went on a boat cruise to Alaska, and they took us up, you know, a lot of passages up to the glaciers, and the boat would just park sideways onto the glacier, and every 5 or 10 minutes, big chunks of ice are falling off, and they're, you know, creating a tidal wave.
Yep.
So they are deadly, and they're just continually moving, even though it's slow. But.
Yeah, definitely. The situation here in the Tibet border and Nepal, Nepal's rescue helicopters have been unable to land in the affected areas until the waters recede. So they're really struggling to actually support the people there. And because a lot of the power lines have been swept away in the deluge as well, they're unable to get information about what has happened and where. They can't actually find out because so much destruction is taking place. Like, there's images here of houses just completely covered in mud and half swept away. Like, there's just no more life left in this area. It's all completely covered. And it took half an hour from where to go for all this destruction to take place, not long enough for people to evacuate. And they believe that there's a likelihood of another secondary flash flood that might occur. And so they're trying to evacuate over 12,000 people from the area, but who knows if they'll be successful in getting everyone out in time for the secondary flash flood. The Chinese government have monitoring cameras for the area for some of the things that they're involved in with the hydroelectric plants nearby. And so some of their camera footage has shown what's been taking place, and they're worried that there might be more to come as well. All of this reminds me of what it says in Matthew 24. That as the end grows near, as it's time for Jesus to come back to take us home to heaven, this earth will wax old like a garment. That's probably not in Matthew 24, but it's somewhere in the Bible referring to the end times. This earth is just breaking apart at the seams, right? And there is absolutely no way to know if you're going to be next. Like, these kind of things can happen at any time in any place. This was a freak accident that nobody saw coming. I know in Australia we seem a lot more safe from at least glaciers, but we do have fires and floods and all sorts of other types of disasters and ecological events. And we've got bird flu coming around the place. There, everywhere we turn, there are more and more news articles of things going wrong in the world, of people suffering and dying, of the world breaking apart, whether through earthquakes or tsunamis or glacier ice flows into people's homes or whatever it might be. The end is coming. And these are some of the signs that show that Jesus will come to take us home soon. However, they are not the ultimate sign. The ultimate sign that it says in Matthew 24 is that right before Jesus comes back, everyone on earth will have an opportunity to know about God. They will be able to have an opportunity to make a decision one way or another to have a relationship with him, yes or no. And so we want to share this good news with you that, yes, there's some bad things happening in the world and it's so unfortunate. And we pray for the people in Nepal and Tibet that are suffering right now or have lost their lives or people who are related to them who are suffering with this great loss. But we are also excited about the fact that Jesus is coming back soon. And we want to do our part in sharing the good news of Jesus' soon return. If you also want to share the good news while there is still an opportunity, before someone in a freak accident loses their life, ask the Holy Spirit to help you to share the good news with somebody today. And maybe you can share Faith FM with them so they can hear about the good news of the gospel, or the Holy Spirit can help you find other creative ways to do that as well.
Thanks for being a part of the Faith FM family. Join our community on Facebook or get in touch at 1-800-FAITH-FM.